We have a five-year-old, and the greatest parental accomplishment I've ever had, I've probably shared with you guys before, was one day I've taught her a maxim. I've taught her a principle of life, a truth that I think is going to help her immensely as she grows up. And one day we were sitting there, and I taught her all these things, and then one of the other children was complaining about something not being fair. You have kids? You guys have kids? You ever know how kids love everything to be fair? It's got to be fair. We want it to be, we want to make sure it's fair. And if you have two kids, you make sure everything's even, make sure everything's fair. And so you work really hard to do that. And our kids complain about it's fair, but I've taught Kelly this truth in life that she tries to teach her brother and sister, and she's the youngest one. It's kind of funny because we were sitting there, someone was complaining about something. I said, Kelly, tell them what you know about life. And she was four. And she said, life's not fair. And that was it. And I'm telling you, that thing that she said has been said over and over and over again. And it makes things so much easier to handle if you just go ahead and embrace that and realize that life isn't fair. And in fact, today what I'm going to propose to you is that you don't really want fair. You really don't. You may think you want fair. We like for things to be fair. We think we want things to be fair. But I'm telling you, really, at the end of the day, and especially at the end of your life, you don't really want fair, I don't think. Because fair means that you get what you deserve. It means you get what's coming to you. We'll talk about that a little bit. You guys, you know, football, one of the most frustrating things about football to me is that these guys that get out of college, right, they go through 4 years of college, and that's kind of tough. That's why I love college football more than professional football, because, you know, they're playing, and some of those guys are going to go be accountants or whatever they're going to be. And so some of those guys, think about that. Some of these guys get finished playing 4 years of college football, and then they go off to be an accountant, which to me would be like purgatory. I mean, I don't do if that existed. It doesn't. But it's like, man, you know, this thing is like, it's so hard. And so they go to a regular life, but then a rare handful of them get drafted, right? And so they get drafted into the professional football league, and you're thinking, man, this kid, his life has just totally changed. I mean, he went from eating in the cafeteria to eating Ruth's Chris every time he wants to now. I mean, he's loving life, right? You would think. But then what always happens with one team that had a first-round draft pick or something, or whoever it is, it seems like there's a holdup. There's a delay because they're holding out. Because they're thinking, no, $9.5 million a year, that's not good enough for me. You know how last year I was just eating the college cafeteria, but now I need $9.6 million. And they don't show up for training camp, and they get their agent to try to negotiate, and they keep going back. And that really kind of wears public opinion against them, but I guess at $9 million a year, you don't care a whole lot about public opinion. So these guys, I mean, does it get on your nerves a little bit when that happens? It does me a little bit, and you're kind of like thinking, man, what's going on here? But what they're doing is what we do in America all the time, and we do it every day, is they're just negotiating. Their terms are higher than the terms that we usually use, because we're just trying to say, okay, can we get a little better 401k? Can I get a little more time off? You know, and when you negotiate things, you're saying, I have something that you need, and you have something that I want, and so we're going to negotiate to get the best possible deal. Hopefully, it'll be a win-win deal. I'll get something from you, and you'll get something from me, and it'll be kind of owed to each other. You know, we'll kind of owe each other. We'll come to this agreement, and we'll owe each other this thing. If I provide X, you provide Y. And anytime you negotiate, you're almost on an equal plane. We have whole like businesses or groups or organizations in the United States that exist for the sole purpose of negotiating with a certain group of workers with a certain industry, and that's what they do. We negotiate all the time. It works out good when you negotiate at your job. You negotiate. Some of you guys are negotiating your marriage. Not a bad thing. Sometimes that can be a bad thing when you start negotiating, but it can be a good thing. You know, I'll do the trash. You feed the animals, or you cook the dinner. I'll eat the dinner. You know, those kind of things. Those kind of negotiating kind of things. No, actually, I'll do the dishes. And then, you know, you negotiate and you make these deals where, you know, you do X and I'll do Y, and it'll work out. Now, it's a good thing with that. It comes out to be a bad thing when your kids start trying to negotiate, doesn't it, sometimes? But we still negotiate with them. You know, if you clean your room, then you get to stay in it. You know, you get to live here. And, you know, those kind of things we negotiate this way. Or wouldn't it be bad if your kids said, you know what, Dad, I'm going to love you as long as you give me allowance? The kid comes to you with a negotiation. Don't you love when they do that? That's at the point where you bring out the life's not fair thing. But, you know, that would just be, there's something in this. Because, you know what, that's wrong. And maybe even in you, there's something in you going, you know what, I'm in a marriage where it feels like it's been negotiated. And as long as I perform this way, or as long as I provide this, or as long as whatever it is, as long as I do what they want me to do, then everything's good. But as soon as anything gets a little bit off, and then it's like the negotiations broke down, and it's not even a fun place to be anymore. And what gets even worse is when we go negotiating with God. A lot of times we treat God, we think life and God even is supposed to be like, well, we act like Sally Brown. You guys know Sally Brown? You know Sally? You know Sally Brown. Rob knows Sally Brown. You guys know Sally Brown. She's Charlie's sister. Yeah. Yeah, Charlie's sister. Remember Charlie Brown? You know, you guys know Charlie Brown, right? I know some of you guys from up north and all, but he's this guy on TV, and we'll tell you about grits later. I'm just kidding. Charlie Brown. I think Charles Schultz was from up there. So Charlie Brown's Christmas special, and the deal is Charlie's writing a letter. He's writing a letter for his sister to Santa Claus, and he's writing the letter, and she's telling him everything she wants and how she's been a really good kid, so he can, you know, he should hook her up. You know, you can give me some good stuff. And she says, you know what? In fact, you don't have to bother going out and buying things. You can just send cash. You can send 20, tens and 20s. It'll be great. And at this point, Charlie gets really just frustrated. He throws up his hands and says, wait a minute, because he's frustrated because everybody's missing the point of Christmas, he thinks. And he goes, what are you doing? She says this line. And you've probably said it, and I've probably said it, and it shares her heart. She says, all I want is what's coming to me. That's all I want. All I want is what's coming to me. All I want is my fair share, right? I want, and what she's saying is, I just want what's fair. I want to negotiate something that's fair for me. That's all I want. But see, I propose that she really doesn't want that. And I think that you really don't want that, especially when it comes to God. But have you ever done that with God? We've done that. How we, God, if you'll just get me out of this situation, you know, I'll be in church next Sunday. Or if you'll get me out of this situation, I'll quit this habit. Or if you'll do this for me, then I'll do this for you. And we negotiate with God. And sometimes we do that. And what happens is then we say, okay, God, I held up my end of the bargain and I didn't get the job. God, I was seeking your face. We were praying for this kid, and we still lost the baby. God, I was giving. I was faithful. I was representing you, and I still lost the job. I still couldn't pay the bill. Whatever it is, and we think, God, you did not come through with me, and it's just not fair. But, I think if we really understood what fair was, we would not ask for fair. Because fair is getting, like Sally says, just get what's coming to you, get what you deserve. And if you're a Christian, here's the thing. You understand what you deserve, don't you? You know what we deserve, because what does the Bible say? Because what you deserve is kind of like when you go to work and you earn a paycheck. They give you the paycheck. I used to do this when I first became a Christian, and it blew my employer away. I worked at a defense company, and it was so much fun. So I'd go, man, thank you so much. And it was bizarre, because I was like, man, I was stoked to get it. I was excited, you know, and I was like, man, this is great. Thank you for my paycheck. But they were like, why are you doing that? Because you earned that. You don't have to do that. I mean, it's okay, but you earned that. You deserve this. It's not like a big deal. You probably actually deserve more, I think. But they said, you deserve this. And it's because it's something that I earned. Well, here's my question for you guys. How many of you guys are tonight, today? What time is it? It's cold. My brain doesn't work right. Are you a sinner? Who's a sinner? Two of you? Three of you? Okay, you're a sinner. You've sinned? No, really? Man, I forgot to lock my car, man. I need to go, hang on, somebody go lock. All you guys are sinners. That's what the Bible says, right? It says everyone has sinned. Everyone's broken God's law. Everyone's fallen short of God's law. Now, those of you that are Christians, you know, tell me, what is the wages? What do you earn for sin? What does sin earn? Death. The Bible teaches that's not just like dying, but that ends up being a real place called hell. And so what you guys are telling me is that's what you really deserve. Some of you have a hard time believing that, but that's a whole nother sermon. But I'm just take my word for it. That's what the Bible says. We deserve death and hell. So God, all I want is what's coming to me. All I want is what's fair. Okay, here you go. You know, no, thank you. I think I'd rather, you know what I'd rather have, God? I'd rather have grace. I'd rather have forgiveness. I'd rather have mercy. God, all I want is what's not coming to me. God, I want to trust you. I want better than what I deserve. I want something instead of what I deserve. See, you guys don't really want fair from God. You want grace. Because grace is giving you what you don't deserve. Grace is better than what you deserve. Jesus, and if you get this mentality of God, I did this, now you owe me that, then it'll steal your joy. It makes life a lot more difficult. It can mess everything up. In fact, some of you, if you're not yet Christians, this whole thing, I'm going to do something so that God owes me something, it can cause you to actually miss heaven. It's a very important thing. It's very important that you get this concept straight, because if you go through life thinking that I did X, so now God has to give me Y, that could be eternally dangerous. And if you're a Christian living that way, you will miss out on so much joy. And the scary thing is, sometimes God might, if you think God owes you, he might give you what you think he owes you, and you'll find out that, man, you could have done so much better. Jesus saw this as being a problem, and as we've been going through Matthew 19 here, we saw last week, you guys remember last week? Were you here last week? It was fun last week. We can't tell you everything we talked about. You'll have to ask somebody, but we had a great time. And in it, the whole point was that we were supposed to go all in. In other words, we're supposed to get everything we are, because basically Jesus is walking along, this rich young ruler comes up to him. This guy has a lot of money. He's a really powerful ruler, religious guy. He comes up and he asks him how to get to heaven. And then Jesus told him this really bizarre thing. He told him kind of what we were talking about. He said, we'll keep the commandments. Because the guy should have said, man, I can't do that. I've failed at that. And that would have led into grace. But he said, no, I've done that. I got that. Check. No problem. So Jesus said, all right, then go all in. He said, sell everything you have and come follow me. And the guy hung his head and walked away. And so then Peter, his disciple, his boys, his guys that are with him, that are following him, that are walking with him, Peter comes up and says, hey, Jesus, hey, we did that. You remember you called us and we were at the boat and, you know, we left, and James and John, you know, we left our family businesses. You know, we've been walking with you for a couple of years here, almost 3 years now. And you know, we've just been, you don't want to have anywhere to sleep. We're going where you tell us to go. We're doing what you tell us to do. We're going to get a lot, aren't we? And Jesus says, yeah, you are. It's going to be really good for you in the kingdom. He says, not only for you, but anybody that goes all in, anybody that follows me, anybody that surrenders their life to me, they're going to be blessed beyond what they can imagine. 100-fold is what he said, but what he meant was way better than you could ever think. And then right after that, he tells this story to kind of explain it, because he ended with kind of a little bit of an enigmatic statement. He said, for the last will be first, the first will be last. And so then he kind of elaborates on that here in chapter 20, verse 1, and he says, the kingdom of heaven is like a master of a house who went out early in the morning to hire laborers for his vineyard. And this master of the house is a great landowner. He's got a vineyard. He's got a place for people to work. He's got servants. He's very wealthy, very powerful. He says, this is what the kingdom of heaven is like. And when he's saying that, he's saying, it's like this. Here's how God, it's like, pretend God is the owner of this vineyard. And so the owner of this vineyard, the master of this house, goes out. And after agreeing with the laborers, now where the master of the house ends up going is to the labor pool. You've seen the labor pools around. You maybe have been to the labor pool. It's kind of a cool deal, because you show up in the morning, you fill out some paperwork, somebody comes along and says, we need some help packing bolts, we need some help painting a thing, we need some help picking up trash, we need some help doing whatever it is. You go work that day, and some of them, you work that day, especially these right here in the Bible, you would work that day and get paid that day, which is really, really a good thing if you don't have any money. And so they would work that day, get paid that day. So there's a group of men hanging out kind of at this general kind of place in town, and this owner of the vineyard goes there and asks these guys. He says, you know, well, let me see where I am here. He goes early in the morning to hire laborers for the vineyard. Now, early in the morning to them, basically their day went from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. That's the work day. So we're assuming these guys start to work at 6 a.m. Some of you guys didn't know that came twice a day, but it's real early. So he goes and gets them first thing in the morning. Nobody got that. Somebody got, okay, he gets them first thing in the morning, and he sends them out in his room. And after, look at verse 2. This is key. After agreeing with the laborers for a denarius. Now, a denarius was an average day's pay for a Roman soldier. Now, Rome is occupying, right? Rome is the powerhouse. So if you're a Roman soldier, you're doing a lot better than a Jew whose land you're occupying. And so here these guys are that don't really, would normally not even earn a denarius. They agree. They negotiate with this landowner. Because the other people we see here, they don't negotiate. They negotiate with this landowner, and he says, I tell you what, I'll give you a denarius. How many of you guys have ever read this story before? You read this story before? You just kind of nod your head. Now tell me that, because I think this is true. I think in our normal, natural reading of the story, most of us identify with this group of people right here. Yeah, God, I'm the one. I signed up. I thought, whatever I'll do, I'm with you, and I'm going to work. I've been working for a while now, you know, whatever it is. I'll just go ahead and tell you where I'm going. I think your life is better if you identify with the last guys in the story, which we'll see them in a minute. Because these first guys, they agreed. They negotiated with the landowner, and they said, this is how much, if you pay us this, we'll do this. If we do X, you do Y, we'll be even. You won't owe us, we won't owe you. It'll be a good deal. So that's what happens. He comes, hires this guy at 6 in the morning. After agreeing with the laborers for a denarius a day, he sent them into his vineyard. And going out about the third hour. Now the third hour, 6, 7, 8, 9 o'clock, right? So 9 o'clock, he comes back. 9 o'clock, he comes back in and saw others standing idle in the marketplace. And he said to them, you go into the vineyard too. But look, they didn't negotiate. He said, and whatever is right, I'll give you. So here are these guys that come in at 9 o'clock, which is when most of America rolls into work, well, 8-ish. But anyway, so 9 o'clock, these guys come in, but instead of having a disagreement, it's a denarius a day, he says, you're just going to have to trust me. Whatever's right, I'm going to give you. And they go, they show up, and they work. So they went. And going out again about the 6th hour and the 9th hour, he did the same. So he goes back at 12 in the afternoon and gets more workers. He goes back at 3 in the afternoon and gets more workers. Now, if you're doing the math, you're realizing, man, these one guys signed up, they're working 12 hours. The next guys are only working 9. These next guys are working 6. And these last guys are working 3 hours. But it just assumed on the last guys that it's just the same agreement. Whatever's right, I'll pay you. They understand that. And then verse 6, probably where we got this phrase from, that this is saying, in about the 11th hour, you know, that's like the last minute. If we can get it at the 11th hour, we'll be good, as long as we get it done. But the 11th hour, so now the 11th hour of the day is actually 5 o'clock, when most Americans are trying to watch the clock and see if it's over now, and, you know, we're trying to get done, and we'll wrap things up, except that a lot of you, I know, aren't. Y'all, like, you're still working at 8 and 9, because y'all are animals. But I mean, y'all are some working machines. But me too, really. But 5 o'clock comes. The day ends at 6. They have 1 hour left, right? At the 11th hour, he went out and found others standing. And he said to them, why do you stand here idle all day? And they didn't say, because we were just wanted to play, you know, PlayStation. But they said to him, because no one's hired us. We're willing to work. We want to work, but no one has hired us. He said to them, you go into the vineyard too. He tells them nothing. No kind of, hey, I'll give you whatever's fair. Just come with me. Why aren't you guys working? Nobody's hired us. Well, then come work. And when evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, call the laborers and pay them their wages. Begin with the last up to the first. So far, so good. No one has a problem with the generous landowner. I mean, he's really a good guy, right? So far, I mean you've employed all these people. You're going to pay them a fair wage. I mean, here these guys are standing here and, I mean, they probably don't have money to buy food for their family tonight and tomorrow. So he comes along and says, I tell you what, you guys come on, just come to the vineyard. I'll pay you what's fair. You can work. You ever been there? You ever felt like that? You ever been in a time in your life where you didn't have a job and then you got a job? And it's kind of funny because, like, especially I used to work construction and we'd go through periods of time where you get laid off and then it's like, when you first go back, it's just so sweet just to be working. It's kind of funny how the thing you used to hate, how the thing you used to think, man, I can't wait till I get out of here, after you don't have it, it's like, man, now, oh, I get the opportunity, and it's great, and you're just thankful for it. Nobody's complaining about the boss right then. And so that's everybody's okay with it up to this point. But then he says, I want you to pay them, not with the guys that came first, but I want you to pay the guys that came last first. You pay them and then go down. And when those hired about the 11th hour came, each of them received a denarius. They received the same thing that the guys that went to work at 6 o'clock had agreed to. They got a whole day's pay for 1 hour's work. Now that's generous, isn't it? That's a pretty good deal. And what the first guys are probably thinking is what you and I would be thinking. They're going, man, we've been out here working all day long. They only worked 1 hour. Man, we're getting 12 denariuses. Denarii, however you say that. We're getting 12 times what they got because we worked 12 times as long, and that would be fair. Right? Because if they get that, then, you know, we should get this. Even though we were happy before to get one denarius, but now that we saw that you can get a denarius for working an hour, man, we want 12, because that's, we just want what's coming to us. Well, he doesn't even really tell us the rest of the story. He doesn't tell us how he paid the other guys. We assume that each one that came, he gave a denarius to. Then the guys that worked 3 hours, you got a denarius. You worked 6 hours, you got a denarius. You worked 9 hours, you got a denarius. So the whole time these guys are standing there watching this, and it's probably going through their head, you know, this in the story, you know, you got to be doing the math, right? Okay, we'll get 12, and then, oh no, okay, well, we won't get 12. I can't do the math for that one, so we'll go halfway. I'm going to get 6. Okay, maybe we'll get 2. Oh no, we get 1. And they're like dejected, because you know, they did like you and I do, like when you hear you're going to get a bonus. You know, you hear you're going to get a bonus, and you already spend it before you get it. You guys do that? Or, you know, if you're going to, you know, we're going to, this house is going to sell, and here's how we're going to, oh, man, I can't wait till that happens, and then we're going to do this. And so they've already probably spent the money, and it comes their time. Where are we? Verse 11. Verse 10. So they came, and they thought that they would receive more, but each of them also received a denarius. So those hired first came, they thought they were going to get more, but they got the same thing. And on receiving it, here's what they did. They did something that really seems amazing, but I wonder how often we actually do it. They grumbled at the master of the house. They complained against the master of the house. They felt like the owner wasn't fair. Have you ever felt like God wasn't fair? Have you ever felt like life wasn't fair? Because here's what they said. They said, these last only worked 1 hour, and you have made them equal to us, and we've borne the burden of the day and the scorching heat, and we've got blisters on our hands, man. We've been working so hard, and you paid them the same thing as you paid us. It's interesting that they said that you made them equal to us. See, that shows that they had elevated themselves. They said, we are better than everybody else because we've been working longer, because we did something, so we deserve better. And they said, you've made them equal. You've lifted them up, and that's not right. Look what he says. He replied to one of them, friend, I am doing you no wrong. Did you not agree with me for a denarius? Take what belongs to you and go. I chose to give to this last worker as I gave to you. Here's a key question. Am I not allowed to do what I choose with what belongs to me? Or do you begrudge my generosity? You look at God and go, God, it's not fair that you're kind to them. It's not fair that you've blessed them. And that's where he says, so the last will be first and the first will be last. And really, in the Greek there, it's not saying that every last will be first and every first will be last, but what it means is that it some of them will be and a lot of them will be. And a lot of times when you look and you see somebody that looks like they're first in the kingdom of God or God's really blessing them, when you get to heaven, he's saying it's not going to be that way. It's going to be different. You're going to realize that God was really blessing them and you didn't even know how much he was blessing them. It's kind of like what these guys do. It'd be kind of like if today, if Dan Rooney came in here. You guys know who Dan Rooney is? You Steelers fans do. You know Dan Rooney. Dan Rooney's the owner of the Steelers. His dad kind of used to own. But anyway, he's the owner of the Steelers. Let's just say, I know we're 4 hours from Tampa, but for some reason he wanted some good coffee, and he kind of came in here today and he got some coffee. And he, just walking around, you were talking to him. I said, man, so you're in the studio? Yeah, that's cool. He goes, hey, you know what? Today, the guy that was supposed to mix the Gatorade and pour it in the cups, he's not going to be able to make it. I don't know why. It's Super Bowl. You'd think he'd be here, but he's not coming. So I was wondering if maybe you could come to the game with me today and help by mixing the Gatorade and pouring the cups at the Super Bowl. Would you be willing to do that? How many of you be willing to do that? I mean, that'd be awesome, wouldn't it? Now, would you go to the game and sit there as you're mixing the Gatorade, pouring the cups, and would you sit there and go, man, there's some big guy standing in front of me. I couldn't see the play. That's not right. Or would you go up to Dan Rooney and go, hey, Dan, I appreciate you getting me into this, you know, the Super Bowl tickets, the worst seats, cost like $800 right now, you know, so I appreciate you getting me into the game for free and all, and let me stand here on the sideline and meet all these famous people and be a part of this. But I noticed something. These people that haven't done anything, you gave them tickets and they're sitting up in the box next to you. What's up with that? Dan, that's not fair, man. How come? You know what? I saw you have some other friends that are over here in this place, and you've given them hot dogs. And that doesn't seem right. Why did you do that? That's not fair, Dan. Would you do that to him? Would you? No, you wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do that. I would hope you wouldn't, because then, you know, they have big guys around that would probably remove. But nobody would do that. We'd say, that's crazy. We'd never do that. But how many times have I gone to God and said, God, I've been serving you. God, look how hard I've been working. I've been trying. And God, what I wanted to happen didn't happen. The medical thing came up. The financial thing came up. And God, I'm looking at this person over here. And to me, I'm telling you, it does not look like they're trying to follow you at all. And they seem to be doing okay. And everything around me seems to be falling apart. God, that's not fair. I want to renegotiate my deal. Because this isn't what I signed up for. That's what these guys did. And that affects your joy. It affects everything. Really, it affects even getting to heaven. This piece of paper here that I have is a contract. Kids are always in our backyard. Like, since we've been there, it's like we have almost no grass. And it's just, I'm just glad the Homeowners Association can't see our backyard, because there's always kids back there, and it's always just dead grass. And it's alive like 2 days out of the year, and then the kids get back on it and kill it all. But it stays okay. But they're always playing, and they're playing flag football now, but they also play football in our backyard now, and our yard's kind of crooked, so they do that a lot. And I walked to the front yard one day, and they were out there, and they were all making contracts. They were making contracts, and this one is with Sammy and Mikey. And it says at the top, 3 years for the Sharks. I don't even know what JS Sharks, and it's one Lego set every month for 3 years for Mikey to play for the Sharks. That's his contract. And I'm looking forward to see if he actually gets that. That's not a bad deal, right? I mean, you had to play football for 3 years. You get a Lego set a month. That's a good deal, right? I think that's kind of cool. It says, just sign here. And they both signed it. So I'm not sure if Mikey owes Sammy or Sammy owes somebody, that quarterback and receiver. So anyway, maybe it's both of them. They're supposed to get it from the Sharks. But the funny thing about this is, you know, when they get... If it was like a real contract, they could get a lot more than a Lego set a month, right? I mean, that would be the deal. And here's what some of you guys have done, is you've gone to God and you said, hey, God, I'll do something for you if you give me whatever it is you imagine. If you give me a Lego set a month, if you do this for me, then I'll, you know, I'm going to do it. You're making this deal, and it's kind of like this thing here, when that's not really what you want. Because the Bible says this, if you agree to a Lego set, you're missing out. Whatever you imagine, God's got better for you. The Bible even says in 1 Corinthians 2:9, what no eye has seen, nor ear heard, nor the heart of man even imagined, what God has prepared for those who love him. You can't even imagine what God has for you. So for you to say, God, and if you really love me, you'll give me this car, this job, or this whatever it is, you're selling, you're missing out. If you're negotiating like these guys at the beginning of the story, and if at the end of the day that's what you get, you're going to realize, man, I got ripped off. I should never have made that deal. What I should have said was, God, I'm just going to serve you, and whatever you want to give me is okay. That's the gospel. The gospel says, God, I don't deserve to serve you. What I deserve is death and hell. And so in your mind right now, I want you to make an imaginary contract with God, even if you've already a Christian, because you may have messed this up a little bit along the way. And just say, God, from here on the point, I got a piece of paper, God, I'm writing my name at the top. God, here I am. I, Mike Lewis, I'm signing a contract with you, God, and I want to go where you want me to go. I want to do what you want me to do. I want to serve you for, in exchange for, whatever. In exchange for whatever you want to give me. I don't want to negotiate with you. I want to trust your goodness. I want to trust your grace. And whatever you give me is okay. So God, if the business goes down, I'm with you. If the relationship falls apart, I'm with you. If the cancer comes in, I'm still following you. No matter what happens, God, I'm trusting you, because I know that this life is not it. That there's so much more to this life than this life. And I'm telling you, that will affect, if you're a Christian, that affects everything. It really does, because here's the difference. Here's the difference it makes. If you're driving home today and you get a flat tire, man, I just came from church. Man, now I got to spend $200 on a tire or whatever, and now I have to change the tire and get all dirty. Or, man, I deserve death and hell. Man, the tire on my car blew up, man. The car, like most of the world doesn't own one, and God, you let me have a car. That's way above hell. Right? I mean, I'm thinking, right? I mean, you know, it's got a Volvo. It's better, right? Is that better? It affects something, doesn't it? Oh, man, I lost a sale. It's not fair. Man, I worked for that. Well, let's see here. Is it better than... It is, right? Oh, man, we lost... You know, the doctor called, and man, I don't know how I'm going to face this. I don't know how financially we're going to handle this. And I don't know what the future holds, but God, I know you're good. And even though it doesn't look fair and it doesn't look right, God, I know you're good, and I'm going to trust you, because this is not the end. This is not it. And I don't want to negotiate with you, God. I just want to, I want to honor you. I want to be focused on you and have an open-ended contract that says, here's all of me, and you give me whatever you want. Because you know what? Just like if you went to the Super Bowl today with Dan Rooney, it would be because someone else paid your way in. The only way you get into heaven is not by you doing good or being good. It's by letting someone else pay your way in and just receiving that gift. That's the gospel. The gospel says, Jesus, I can't work to earn it. I know that. I know I've sinned and I don't want to trust you and surrender my heart to you. That's where that contract is about. And I pray if you haven't done that today, you would do that. Maybe the first time in your life you say, Jesus, I'm going all in. I would give you my heart. I give you my life. Whatever you tell me to do, I'm just following you. I surrender. Really, it's more of a surrender than a contract. It's just saying, here, you have control. Christian, this is a good quote for you. It's from Warren Wiersbe. He said, we should not serve him because we want to receive an expected reward. And we should not insist on knowing what we will get. God is infinitely generous and gracious and will always give us better than we deserve. That's the whole point of the story, is that God will give you better than you deserve. You just need to trust him. Christian, as long as we do not neglect the opportunity given to us, it doesn't matter. It's not about how long you serve or the time you spend in a service. That's not nearly as important as the attitude of your heart as you serve. It's possible to do the Father's work and yet not do his will from the heart. His pride will creep in. You'll start to think you're better than other people. Beware of comparing yourself to others. Beware of criticizing God and feeling that you have been left out and that it's just not fair. You don't want to negotiate with God. You want his grace. And when you get to that point, when the stuff comes in your life that doesn't look fair, instead of you getting all upset about it, you go, you know what, God, that's fascinating. Because I know you love me. I know you're gracious to me. And you're going to work this out. And I'm going to trust you. And I'm going to have joy in spite of this. And I'm going to look to you for wisdom. And we're going to walk through it. And it may be hard. And it may be heartbreaking. But God, I know you're in control. In spite of what I see around me. And really, that's what the gospel is all about. It's about trusting God with our biggest problem, which is not our health or our finances or our relationships, but our biggest problem is that problem we talked about earlier. It's our sin. And the way that sin is dealt with and taken care of by God for us so that we can be forgiven and spend eternity with him in heaven is by his son being mocked and crucified and dying. Because the wages of sin is death, and so Jesus pays that price for us so that if we turn from our sin and trust him, we can be forgiven. And he tells them about this because the next thing he does is he says, as he was going up to Jerusalem, he took the 12 disciples aside, and on the way he said to them, see, we're going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be delivered over to the chief priests and scribes, and they will condemn him to death. That thing that you deserve, they're going to condemn him to that. And deliver him over to the Gentiles to be mocked. I mean, think about this. Here, the King of Kings, the one that created them, is being made fun of by the ones that he gave life and flogged 39 times. The whip with little leather straps on the end of it embedded with bone and rock so that when it hits, it would rip away the flesh, and crucified. He's telling these guys, look, I'm going to be stripped naked, nailed to a cross after being beaten to where you can't even recognize me, and they're going to hang me up in front of people naked publicly, and I won't be able to breathe except for pushing down on the nails that are through my feet, and eventually strength will not be there to lift up to get a breath, and my lungs will fill with fluid and I will suffocate and die for you. But he will be raised again on the third day, he says. He says, this is what it's about. Peter, you're worrying about what you're going to get out of the deal, and you just need to realize that you get in on the deal. That's the best thing. And what you get out of the deal is going to be awesome. But just that you get in on it. You couldn't get in on it yourself. This is what it's going to cost for you to get in on it. The guys, they still don't get it, because you'll see next week as they go, they send their money. They weren't in a great position in the kingdom. But in verse 28, it's not on the screen, but Jesus sums it up. He says, even as the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many, this is what it's about. So Jesus came to die for you, for us. And when we observe the Lord's Supper, which is what we're about to do, this communion thing, it's saying, God, we're not negotiating with you. This is, you paid the price, and we don't deserve it, and we acknowledge that you died for us, and we just want to remember that. You know, and for thousands of years, Christians have been doing this. They've been getting together, maybe not in schools, but they've been getting together in caves, they've been getting together in homes, in church buildings, and they've been drinking a little bit of juice or wine, and they've been eating a piece of bread, remembering that this whole deal is not about us doing good so that God will accept us, but it's about God becoming man, dying on a cross so that we could be accepted. And as we prepare to do this, two things I want to warn you about. Number one, if you are a Christian, it's a time for reflection. It's a time to examine your heart and see if there's anything in your life that you need to get right with God. And if you're not a Christian, it's a time to trust Him. Just enter that open-ended contract where you say, God, I'm just yours and I trust you. You've promised eternal life and I want that and I need that, but I'm not doing it just for that. I'm doing it because I recognize that you created me and I want to live for you. And so what I would say to you, and I'll read the scriptures where Paul taught the church at Corinth as well about this, but if you are not a Christian, either trust Christ in these moments and then you're welcome to come partake, but if you're not yet a Christian, I would hold off. Or if you're even a Christian and you have sin in your life that you're either not willing to repent of right now or you're not able to repent of right now, I would hold off. We'll do this again because here's what Paul said about this. I think I have it on here too. It's in 1 Corinthians 11. Paul said, I received from the Lord what I also delivered to you. That the Lord Jesus, on the night when he was betrayed, took bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it and said, this is my body which is for you. Do this in remembrance of me. So he breaks the bread, and it's not literally his body. He's saying this is bread that symbolizes my body. And he says, do this. When you do this, you're reminded of the fact that I'm about to die for you. And now we remember that he actually died for our sin. That's why if you're holding sin in your heart, you don't want to come and say, yes, Jesus, thank you for dying for me. And because you paid the price for my sin, I'm going to keep living in it and loving it. And I'm going to act like everything's okay with us and just go ahead and remember that you died for it. He says, this is my body, which is for you. Do this in remembrance of me. In the same way, also, he took the cup after supper, saying, this cup is the new covenant in my blood. And again, we just have grape juice up here, and it just symbolizes this. But he says, this cup is the new covenant in my blood. Do this as often as you drink it in remembrance of me. And you're saying, I recognize that without the shedding of blood, there's no forgiveness of sins. And Jesus, you shed your blood so that I could get grace, so that I could get what I don't deserve. And as often as you eat this bread and drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes. Whoever, therefore, eats the bread or drinks the cup of the Lord in an unworthy manner will be guilty of profaning the body and blood of the Lord. Let a person examine himself then, and so eat of the bread and drink of the cup. For anyone who eats and drinks without discerning the body eats and drinks judgment on himself. That is why many of you are weak and ill, and some have died, he told the church at Corinth. But if we judged ourselves truly, we would not be judged. So what this is, this time is for you right now. I'm gonna play a little song, just Wonderful Cross for a moment, and take this time to seek God's face and say, God, is there anything in my life, Lord? Am I coming to you thinking that you owe me? Or is there anything I need to repent of right now, Lord? And I want to make sure I'm right with you. And if you don't know Christ, I encourage you, just right where you're sitting, say, Lord, I want to surrender my heart and my life to you. And if you do that this morning, please come see me. But if you do that this morning, by all means, join us at the table. And when you go to the table, just take some bread and take some juice and remember that Jesus' body was given for you. His blood was shed for you. And you can just partake right there and then make your way back to your seat. But you can take your time. We're going to play a song. I want you to have time to pray. And you go as you feel comfortable going. And then we're going to sing a song after that as well. So you have plenty of time here. There's no rush. And so just take a few moments as this song is going to prepare your hearts and pray. And then as you feel comfortable, you head to one of the tables, either the front or the back.